Now, 10,000 free home test kits for sexually transmitted infections are being ordered by Irish households out there every month, according to the Minister with responsibility for public health. The HSE has received more than 100,000 orders between January 23 and the end of November, while 91,000 were ordered in 2022. That service is provided to people aged over 17 with the option to test for STIs discreetly at home. Now, Mary Herlihy is manager of the Donegal Women's Centre and joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you so much for calling up.
What's your initial sort of read of these figures and the increase?
Yeah, I suppose it's a mixed bag of reactions to that. On the one hand, you know, it's alarming, I suppose, that so many people are having to get tested. That's probably all our initial reaction. However, anybody in the healthcare system, you know, are delighted that this is happening. It's a good thing that there are this many tests going on and that people are availing of this scheme. Just because that many tests are being given out doesn't mean that they're all positive, you know, and it can lead to bigger conversations, and it can open conversations maybe that may not have been happening up until now. So it is overall a very good thing, a very positive move.
And presumably these things are successful or popular, however one might want to frame it, if there's an anonymity to it and an ease to it. But it would be very useful to sort of try and get some sense of the triggers or the causes or the demographics, just in case there is a public health issue there that we need to be focusing a little more on, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's probably broader than that even. You know, even take County Donegal as an example. It's a very rural county. You know, people are living outside of Letterkenny. Transport isn't always easy to get into the town. So having this accessibility to this test that's free, that can be done in the comfort of their own home, is only a positive thing. It's a good move, you know, and that's where I think the accessibility is opening up to. Also, many people are probably still using, you know, the family GP or their childhood GP. So going in and talking about sexual health to the family GP may not be an option for them. People move around from county to county. Yeah. You have students moving around. So I think it's much broader, you know, than there being any one particular reason or any.
So how are people finding out about this service? Because it's not something I was aware of. Even existed, if I'm honest with you.
There was a big campaign done on it last year. Right. And obviously, you know, through organisations and the work that we do, we would also be promoting it. Any organisation would be aware of the difficulties of the people that they work with. So when sexual health or, you know, well-being or a concern comes up, anybody with this information would be given it. The GPs are all using it as well. Because it's a great resource for them. You know, they don't have to look after the testing. It can be referred on. Mm-hmm. It can be, you know, done in their own homes without any embarrassment.
Yeah. And so do you think this triggers any conversation about how, you know, say, for instance, using protection during sex? OK, you know that obviously either lots of people are and don't trust it, or lots of people aren't and are using this sort of as a finding out you have something, getting treatment for some things, it could be much more complicated, and for others, damage could be done or something could be spread before, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Is there anything, a red flag there for you at all?
Oh, absolutely. Regard? Yeah. And I think it opens up a huge conversation, and it's a very welcome conversation that we have, because this is really about normalising our sexual health. It's normalising a very important part of our being. You know, we're holistic beings. There's different parts of us, and this is one part of it. And traditionally, I think because of stigma or embarrassment or cultural beliefs or whatever, you know, we didn't talk about it. And now it's being openly talked about and openly discussed. And, you know, there's a big campaign around consent, around, you know, what is a sexual or a safe sexual relationship or a safe intimate relationship. And this is part of that conversation. So it's really kind of trying to get to prevent the problem before it happens, you know, to know that these resources are out there. Obviously, wearing protection, using a condom, you know, all of that is the first basis. You know, if you're going to enter into an intimate partner, you know, that has to be the first basis. That's not always the case for a variety of reasons. a variety of reasons. So there's a good. It's good to know that this backup is here and that people can avail of it.
But it should be a backup. It shouldn't be the first line of defence, surely.
No, it shouldn't. Yeah.
I'm not saying it is either, yeah, but yeah. You know, we're talking about a lot of people here.
Yeah,
100,000. There might be people that have regular screening.
Well, that's the other thing.
I imagine there are some that might do this once a month.
Exactly. You know, that this is a normal part of their health being that they test on a very regular basis. They might be in a monogamous relationship or whatever. You know, I suppose we shouldn't be judging why people are taking the test either.
I would never judge, but I think we can learn from an understanding.
Absolutely.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Especially as, you know, generations are coming through the whole time. So
yeah.
I think we could maybe look at it not through, you know, judgmental spectacles, but certainly what can we learn from here? Or do we need to learn anything from here?
And I think the biggest one is opening that conversation, you know, telling people this is what is available. Because from this, if somebody has unprotected sex and, you know, they're worried or they're symptomatic or asymptomatic, as is in the lot of cases with STIs, it'll open up the conversation around contraception, around consent, around, you know, safe sex in the future. What is a healthy relationship?
Yeah,
so it feeds into every kind of avenue of our lives, really.
So what form do these tests take then? So, and how do you acquire one to begin with?
Yeah, so you go on to sh24.ie. And again, you'll access it through any of the HSE websites.
Okay, right.
So our sexualwellbeing.ie is another one. And you just put in your details and you order.
They send the kit out.
And
right?
They send the kit out.
When you get it, you provide a sample.
Yeah.
What's tested for?
There's syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia and HIV are all tested.
Okay.
So there's a variety of different tests allocated or required in order to test for those. My understanding is that they also test for Hep B and C, I think it is, if that's required as well. And then it's all posted back in the information is given. You can go in, drop it into your post office. Then it's sent back to the company again for testing.
Mm-hmm.
So my understanding is that if there's no issue, you won't hear from them. And then if there's an issue, you will get a text message. I think you'll get a text message with the result either way.
One way.
So you'll know.
And then there are pathways then, I think, particularly with chlamydia. You can actually receive an online prescription. So you could be not diagnosed. I don't know what the phrase is. It could be found in your sample. So you do have chlamydia. So I suppose it is a diagnosis as such. And then you can receive treatment. You never have to go near a clinic or a GP, for an example.
Yeah. And that's the beauty about it, because there is that follow up and it's still, your anonymity is still regarded. You don't have to suddenly present at the local chemist or to your local GP looking for a prescription. You know, it's all done through that same team, and you can still stay in contact with them through the text number that they give you. Prescriptions are sent out and then the treatment process begins.
Okay, it's an interesting one. Interesting to have a conversation with you, actually. We should talk again, I think.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for calling up to us. That is Mary Herlihy here, who is the manager of the Donegal Women's Centre and the services you provide, just whilst
sure.
I have you here, if that's okay.
So I suppose follow on from that, we have a young women's clinic which will be on this evening and every Monday except for bank holidays, and that's a drop-in clinic for women between the ages of 17 up to 25th birthday. And that's just drop in, and it's all around sexual health. Then on a Tuesday and Wednesday evenings, we have clinics for women over 25 plus around family planning, around contraception, sexual health. And also as well, just for people to know that women up to the age of 30 will now receive free contraception. And we're obviously part of that scheme as well. So, you know, this package, the services that we provide, they're all wrap around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always someplace to go to get this help and to get the information on it.
And if people want to know where you are or contact the centre?
Yeah, so we're located on the Port Road in Letterkenny, directly across from On Green and Theatre. And you can just get us on 074-91-24985 or through our website, donegalwomenscentre.ie.
Okay, thank you very much, Mary Herlihy, manager of the Donegal Women's Centre. Speak to you again. Dr. Kieran O'Farrey, GP, joins us. Good morning, Kieran. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing?
Good to have you back on the programme. Before we talk about what we invited you on to, a lot of upper respiratory, RSV, flus, colds, COVID going around, doctor.
Absolutely. Tis the season, and we always know after Christmas we see a surge, and we're definitely seeing a surge in general respiratory illness with a lot of viral infections, a lot of RSV, and now a lot of influenza circulating as well.
Hopefully we're not too far away from the peak of those that are most damaging to people.
Yes, that's what we would expect, but I suppose you just urge people to be vigilant. Try to reduce any spread as much as they can, and mind themselves. You know, the health service is busy and under pressure, but here to help as much as we can. And so if you're unwell and symptoms are ongoing, to seek medical attention.
Indeed. We invited you on to talk about what shape Ireland's COVID inquiry might take. The terms of reference for that inquiry are to be brought to Cabinet shortly, along with strict time limits. A review of how this country handled the COVID-19 pandemic is expected to analyse the government's response, how hospitals and nursing homes coped, and the effect it had on society and the economy. I think those expecting this to sort of findings like, you know, I think people expected the one in the UK to find out that some people that it was all a whole load of nonsense. That's really not what the purpose of this inquiry is. It's to ascertain what we did right, what we did wrong, and to learn for the future. I think, what would you like to see, Kieran?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Greg. You know, this was obviously a very difficult and challenging time for the country, for individuals, for the health service, and for those in positions of authority and power making decisions. And obviously lots of people lost loved ones and had very difficult and challenging experiences with the health service and people unwell. But as you said, the things any inquiry needs to do is look at what went well, what didn't go so well. And the main thing is look at what learnings can be taken from it, what can we do differently in the future, and what, if anything, we need to change within our systems so that if such an event ever comes again, that we can do better.
Because we challenged all, I'm using loose language here, but it seemed like we challenged all our resources to the one issue and neglected other really important things, be it, you know, children's education, be it, you know, cancer care or whatever it might be. You know, we need to look going forward as to how we balance out our response to something if it should ever visit us again. I'm not saying it's gone, but you know what I mean.
Yes, absolutely. And I suppose it was a new, everything was very novel. It was rapidly changing and evolving, and decisions were made quickly and with people's best interests at heart. But obviously every decision can have consequences. And we know now that there were many consequences from the decisions that were made in terms of people's mental health, children's education, and so forth. You know, I have young children myself. My daughter was just after starting primary school, had only been in for 3 months, and it was a massive change. And I've seen the difference then when my other daughter started school and didn't have that disruption. So there are lessons that are to be looked at, but they need to be looked at in the cold light of day with evidence and to try and see, well, what could have been done better. And I suppose the important thing with any inquiry is that it's not about pointing fingers or blaming. It's about learning lessons so that we can do things better in the future.
And are you content with that? Because there are some decisions that people have felt very strong consequences of, that, you know, there are some people that will want people to be blamed.
Of course, and I think unfortunately sometimes that becomes what an inquiry is all about, blame. And we've seen the inquiry in the UK and the farce that has become about reading messages and trying to find bad words and slags that people threw at each other. And, you know, I hope that we're better than that here. And I think the point of an inquiry, if it is about learning lessons, has to be that, you know, it's not about finger pointing. Obviously, if there are serious errors or mistakes that were made, and then obviously accountability is important. But I think the main aim of any inquiry is about learning lessons. And if it becomes too much about finger pointing and blame, then I think it'll lose that. And, you know, you need buy-in from people from an inquiry. People need to be able to be honest and open without the fear that they're going to get blamed and pointed out. And, you know, as things were moving fast, obviously it's easy in hindsight to look back and say, God, we shouldn't have done that or we shouldn't have done
but
this.
But I think even, I take your point and I'm not contradicting you, but I remember at the time when things were emerging here very quickly and people were being moved from hospitals to nursing homes, like that was... At that time, when it was live going, what is going on here? We've the most vulnerable people in these settings, and we're moving people who haven't been tested into these settings, or you know what I mean? So that was live. Do you know what I mean? That's just one example, I think, where we were living in the moment. We don't necessarily need hindsight, Kieran. I remember saying on this programme that there's something seriously amiss with that decision.
Yeah, and I'm sure the inquiry will look at all those things and look at the things that didn't go according to plan and the consequences of that. I suppose when I think back on the very start of the pandemic and when things were moving so fast, you know, I've never seen anything like it. We were here in our surgery with daily, sometimes if not twice, three times a day meetings. You know, we were trying to procure PPE from hardware shops, and you know, we were seeing the images of Italy and people on the streets, and that immediate fear was that our health system was going to get completely overwhelmed to the point that people who should be saved were not going to be able to be saved. So it was coming at it from that point of view, and obviously those decisions were made you know, very, very quickly. But I don't doubt that things could have been done differently. Yeah. And if we were doing them again, would be done differently.
For sure. Listen, thank you so much for your time this morning. I really do appreciate it. That's Dr. Kieran O'Farrie there, who is a GP. A caller says, in relation to farmers' mental health, the organisation Grow Mental Health have peer support meetings throughout the county and nationwide. In Donegal, there are meetings in Stranorlar, Letterkenny, Carn Donagh, Buncrana, Killybegs and Donegal Town. There are also online meetings. Check out grow.ie or telephone Marion or Paul. I've got two mobile numbers here which I can pass on to you. And I think, you know, that's fantastic to see, and a great network and a great spread there as well. It's just making sure that we can get the message to people that might need some help or to talk to actually engage. OK, so we have some very lovely people and we have their numbers here if you want to talk to them to find out about attending one of these peer support meetings that take place right across Donegal. It's awful, says this listener, what they're doing to farmers, people who looked after communities for hundreds of years. The government now wanting to ruin and get rid of them. That comes in from Josie. I was in a hotel to book an overnight stay. I had cash in my hand. They asked for a card number. Cash is still in use. Okay, the card number was, that's a bit more complicated. They look for a card number in case there's any damage done to the room or in case anything is taken from the mini fridge, and that can't be covered by cash. That's always been the case as long as I can remember. I'm not sure there's a way around that. Maybe some hotels, in fact, now I say it, you can leave a cash deposit at the desk. I don't think that's the norm anymore, but you certainly could at a time. I can't remember what it was, 200 or 300 euro. But the reason they check your card is that if you do any damage or any damage is done, that they can claw back that from your card. So, right, Sean McKiernan's a political commentator and he joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Greg, and hello to everyone in Donegal.
No, it's great to have you on the programme. We were chatting earlier on to the Sinn Féin finance spokesperson, Piers Doherty, who said he hopes there is a general election this year. We know what's happening in Britain and elsewhere. There's elections all over the place. I think there's more votes this year than there has been for an awful long time. What's your feelings about a general election in 2024? Is there any appetite for it from the government party? I can't see a controversy bringing them down at this point.
Well, Greg, it's quite right to say it is a year of democracy. Something like 4 billion people in the region of 70 countries around the world are going to be exercising their democratic rights in different forms. And it's already a very busy year politically in this country, with or without a general election. You have a number of referenda in March to do with the role of women and the status of the family, etc. You have local and European elections then on the 7th of June. You have the potential for what's called a patent referendum to do with Ireland's membership of an EU court to do with patents, which is essentially the copywriting of inventions and of innovation. And obviously, there's the possibility then of a general election in the midst of that. I tend to veer on the conservative side and think that the government will seek to go its full term. Its full term would bring it to March 2025. And I think the reason they will seek to do that is because of housing. And you were talking about COVID there as your last guest. And I mean, COVID delayed a lot of things in this country over a period of around 2 years, including housing output. And I think they'll be seeking to maximise that. The only kind of PS I'd add to that, or the only kind of clarification I'd add to that, is the fact that you have local and European elections. I see where the EU Council President Charles Michel is indicating that he will step down in June or July because he's going to run as an MEP. And you could have a situation where a lot of our TDs potentially will become MEPs if they seek to run. And indeed, if the EU commissionership is filled by a TD as well, that's going to trigger a number of by-elections. And there may be an appetite in government to actually have a general election rather than a series of by-elections, which could be very damaging.
Plus, of course, too, Sean, both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and you can see some signs of it as well, are going to be doing their own electioneering, you know, taking credit for certain initiatives, maybe even attributing blame around the coalition where it's electorally advantageous. I mean, that's inevitable. People are going to be jockeying, even within a coalition, for people's votes down the line.
Yeah, I think that happens. And I mean, I think you can see it in particular with the Green Party, with a lot of rural Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil TDs heaping all sorts of blame on the Green Party for various issues, whether it's deserved or not. I think that's a dynamic even within parties. You see that within parties. Every party is a coalition to some extent between people who maybe are a little bit more on the left or a little bit more on the right. And you also have urban-rural divides evident within parties as well as within the government overall. I think to some extent that is healthy. The danger is when it gets too much out of hand. And, you know, I was reading an analogy recently about actually Joe Biden being the Democratic candidate. And there's a lot of scepticism amongst Democrats in America about his candidacy. But the view is that if you have a vote, if you have a boat that isn't particularly shipworthy, you may desire a different boat, but you don't start poking holes in the one you have, you know?
Yeah, indeed. OK, well, I'll ask you another question about the US elections in a moment, but just in relation to the local and European elections, that might form the decision for different reasons, as you've outlined, as to when we see the general election. The local elections are going to be really fiercely contested, and we're going to see sort of you know, different shades of politics contesting them. Of the usual, of course, independents, people maybe who would be look for a referendum or some change in our immigration. It's going to be interesting to see who sort of makes any gains anywhere, if at all.
I think the big headline out of the local elections, you can almost write it here and now, and I think that's to do with Sinn Féin. On the last occasion, they got about 9% of the vote. They got in the region of 80 seats. They lost almost half of their seats in the local elections. And I think inevitably, even if they don't fulfil the heights that opinion polls have them at, and some opinion polls have had them in the mid to late 30s, there has been a little bit of pullback more recently. But even if they don't meet those heady heights, I think Sinn Féin are going to make advances in the local elections and in possibly the European elections as well. And I think that will be the headline. And I think whilst I am conservative in my view about the general election date being spring of 2025, I think the temptation for Leo Varadkar is Taoiseach, and he is primarily in the driving seat in terms of the timing of a general election. I suspect he will want to consult with his colleagues, but I suppose the right of initiative is with the sitting Taoiseach. I think that might be a temptation. Do you allow Sinn Féin to gain momentum in the local European elections, or do you head them off at the pass?
Yeah, it's a fascinating stuff. It seems there'll be an election in Britain in the second half of next year, this year actually. We're in 2024 now. that's kind of really, is that a fait accompli? Is it really how much of a wipeout the Conservatives suffer, rather than whether or not they can, keep Labour out?
Well, at the risk of being accused of being a bit of a closet Tory, I think there are signs of hope. I do think there are signs of hope for the Conservative Party in Britain, and I'll outline them if I can. I think one of the dangers for Sir Keir Starmer is that whilst Labour is surging ahead in the polls in the region of 20%, there's still, if you dig into his favourability ratings and other kind of polling data on him, there's still a little bit of doubt about him with the British public. Now, it can also be said the same is true of Rishi Sunak. I think another challenge is that I suppose Jeremy Corbyn, who had quite a good election in 2017, but quite a bad election in the face of Brexit and in the face of Boris Johnson in 2020, I suppose brought the Labour Party to such a low ebb that, in fact, you'd almost need a landslide above and beyond what Tony Blair got in 1997 in order to have any kind of a decent majority. I think that is a challenge for the Labour Party. I think other things like David Cameron coming back into cabinet probably do allow Rishi Sunak to focus more on party matters, to focus more on domestic matters in a very crucial 12-month period at a time when really international affairs are demanding the attention of all of our leaders, no matter what country they're in. I think it's very helpful to have a former Prime Minister in the Foreign Office who you can outsource all of that to and allow you to concentrate on domestic issues. But I suppose being realistic about it, there's a very significant hill to be climbed here.
Yeah, and indeed, and it's where the battle lines will be drawn. And, you know, on issues like immigration, of course, they're ever present. But also, too, say, for instance, the amount of funding going to Ukraine would be another example, or even a stance on the situation in the Middle East. These are all issues that people are inclined to vote on.
Yeah, and I think probably Rishi Sunak, David Cameron now as Foreign Secretary, Boris Johnson in his time have been very fierce advocates of the Ukraine. And I think in Britain, I think a lot of British people, whether they're Tories or in the Labour Party, respect, I suppose, Britain's role in that conflict and in trying to make sure that Ukraine is a bulwark for democracy and for the kind of the broad Western liberal values that we all buy into. But I think that is something that's overshadowing these contests globally, I suppose, is that kind of battle between totalitarianism and more autocratic regimes and indeed regimes where there is autocracy, but also maybe a multi-party system. So you have the illusion of democracy and kind of the free world and democratic states. And I think even in America, which we look up to as a democratic state, faces that challenge. And I think that's very worrying.
Yeah, and of course, it's how something is framed too, because often as a voter, we don't dig terribly deep into it. And it can be framed in such a way that my point is, I think the onus is on us as individuals as well to do our research. Now, we're all kind of a little sick of listening to that phrase, but I think it's really important that we source our own information as much as is possible. And I mean that from all quarters. The United States also, too, it's incredibly interesting over there. I mean, who are going to be the runners and riders? Do we know at this point? Is it going to be Biden v. Trump? And what is a possible, well, any outcomes possible? What's a likely outcome?
But I think, surprisingly, and I suppose for a lot of people over here and sort of issuing the health warning in this country because of Bill Clinton and because of JFK, we probably tend to be more democratically leaning, even though actually a lot of Irish Americans, because of the abortion issue, tend to be more Republican leaning. But I suppose in this country, we tend to be more democratically leaning. And I suppose it will come as a shock to a lot of people in this country that Trump seems to be the inevitable Republican nominee. And I suppose I do have a theory on this. I think the American judicial system and legal system and prosecutorial system can be very party political. And I do wonder, do some of these Democratic-leaning prosecutors, will they kind of rue the day that they've pursued these cases? Now, the various cases against them are about very important legal points, and they're also about very important principles you know, the principle that you do accept election results and that you don't try and usurp them. But notwithstanding that, I do wonder, will they rue the day that they've given this man, who has a huge capacity for reading the public mood, a huge capacity for generating headlines, for getting coverage, for, you know, getting coverage even out of situations that would humiliate or embarrass other people, will they kind of rue the day that they've given this guy these opportunities? At the moment, he seems to be the lead Republican nominee. But having said that, I would urge listeners in Donegal maybe to note the name Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley was a governor of South Carolina, was a former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, and is someone who, in matchups with Biden, actually beats Biden better than Trump in terms of these polls they do, these imaginary where they pit other potential candidates against Biden, not just Trump. So I think we should keep an eye on that name and on Nikki Haley.
All right, and the thing about the US elections, and there'll be countries all over the world and leaders all over the world watching very, very closely. If and some will believe it will be in a good way, others in a bad way. If Donald Trump is re-elected, it has global consequences.
It does. And I mean, even without his re-election, the very narrow Republican lead in the House of Congress is a challenge in terms of funding Ukraine and ensuring it gets it the right type of aid and the right type of high-end kind of military technology that it does need to kind of wage its war. And I mean, that's already a challenge. And I think having Trump in the president's office will only exacerbate those problems. And I suppose the other thing is that you do see this trend. And we I talked about that battle between authoritarianism and freedom. You do see people being emboldened. So you see the behavior of Orban in Hungary, for instance, and that emboldens other leaders to kind of emulate that behavior, particularly if they don't see any drawbacks to it or any sanctions. I suppose Trump's election is going to embolden other political players to kind of emulate his behavior, as his possible election would embolden other players to emulate his behaviour.
Right, and just finally, I wonder if you have any insight. We did have speculation through an interview that Charlie McConnell Ogue might become the new EU commissioner. It looks like it is going to be a Fianna Fáil. He issued a statement to us saying that we were engaging in idle speculation and he's committed to run in the next election and serve the people of Donegal. And then another newspaper at the weekend suggested that he, in an interview, would rule nothing out. So it's very hard to get a sense of where we're at. Do you have any insight, Sean, as to who the next EU commissioner is likely to be?
I don't. I think a lot of it will be to do with the result of the European elections. A lot of it will be to do with what other jobs are in play. And you would have seen, for instance, speculation around Pascal Donoghue and the IMF job. I think if there's any possibility, in terms of, say, the presidency of the European Commission, if there's any possibility that Pascal Donoghue, Leo Varadkar or Micheál Martin could become president of the Commission, de facto they will be the person who will be the commissioner. And if that's not a possibility, I wouldn't rule out Mairead McGuinness, even though it's seen as Fianna Fáil's turn. I wouldn't rule out Mairead McGuinness, particularly if there's a hint that Von der Leyen remains president of the Commission, and there's a hint that Mairead McGuinness is in line for a much more prestigious high-level job, then I wouldn't rule her out. And obviously there'll have to be some compromise within government around that. But mm-hmm. I think another dark horse potentially is Micheál McGrath.
Right.
If you see a situation where Micheál Martin is going to remain on as leader of Fianna Fáil and is going to have another go at Taoiseach, you know, Micheál McGrath may not wish to be the curate of the parish and the understudy indefinitely, and he may want to forge a career in his own right at a European level.
Sean, lovely to chat to you. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
But
it's
going to
be an interesting, if you like elections anyway, it's an interesting year, put it like that, yeah? Okay. That is Sean McKiernan there. We'll be back with more after a break. Now, Donegal's punishment for playing 17-year-old Finbar Rorty in the win over Armagh in the Dr McKenna Cup is expected to be known today. The Niamh Connell cornerback was underage at the time of the game last Wednesday and only turned 18 the day after the 16-point victory. To discuss that, and I suppose to reflect on the first couple of competitive games under the second coming of Jim McGuinness, we're joined by our sports editor, the one and only Oisin Kelly. Oisin, thanks very much.
Good morning, Greg.
For coming down the stairs.
Didn't have to come too far.
Right, so, just to be clear, it's up to the powers that be to decide the punishment, but if it goes the wrong way for Donegal, the punishment for fielding Finbar could be really quite significant. It would be viewed as a serious...
Could be severe. Like, to be honest, I think the rule's a bit ridiculous, Greg, yep. where they couldn't play a young man of 17 years of age in a Gaelic football match in a pre-season competition. Yes, the rule is there. He had to be 18 by the 31st of December. That wasn't the case. But when you compare it to another Gaelic Games competition under the GAA umbrella, which is the Conor McGurk Cup, which is the hurling equivalent, the senior hurling equivalent of the senior football Dr McKenna Cup, you are allowed to play a 17-year-old hurler. But in the McKenna Cup, you're not allowed to play a 17-year-old footballer. So it's a bit of a ridiculous rule, particularly when you're dealing with a pre-season competition as such.
So we're focused on the potential to lose points, okay? So that would...
There's a few differences now. Yeah, we don't know what the outcome they met yesterday. Yeah. There was a hearing about the breach of rules that took place.
Yeah.
What that outcome is as we speak...
We don't know.
But my point is, the notification hasn't. My understanding is Donegal GAA have yet to get official notification of what it is. But the young fellow in question, Finbar Rorty, who's got a huge future in Donegal GAA, we have to remember that he's a really, really talented footballer. Mm. This was all putting him, and there's pressure on the young on his young shoulders.
Yeah, for sure.
Off the back of this as well, I feel sorry for him. It's not a nice position for him to be in. He'll receive a ban of some sort. Maybe a couple of weeks. In the rule book, it says the person, persons in charge, could be hit with a suspension of up to 8 weeks, maybe more. Does that person or persons in charge, is that Jim McGuinness? Is that his assistant? Is that maybe the Donegal official who was on the line that night, the Donegal secretary? And there's also the situation where you could lose the points in the game as well. Which effectively means after such a very good start for Donegal, they won't be able to make the semi-final this weekend.
So theoretically, we could miss out the semi-final. That's fine. That's the McKenna Cup. But listen, we're looking towards Cork now at the end of this month and beyond. Are you saying it is possible, though we don't know, it's possible that Jim McGuinness is banned from the sideline?
Yep.
For
That's very possible. If he's deemed to be the man in charge, one of those persons in charge, that he could receive a suspension, which could be 8 weeks, and that would rule him out of several games, not just the Cork game, several games in the league. But then there is a hearings process, there's an appeals process that may be reduced. It's all a bit unknown at the moment, Greg. The starting point's going to be what sanctions are going to be handed down. The bottom line is, whether we like it or we don't, and again, I feel it's a ridiculous rule that somebody at that age can play hurling but can't play football. Donegal, unfortunately, did break the rules, and there will be punishments of some sort coming. Will Ulster take a look at it in a lenient way, given that it's a pre-season competition? We don't know. Or is it the fact that it's so high profile because it's involving somebody like Jim McGuinness and there's so much media attention around. Yeah,
you can't seem to have favour. Not that they would, but you can't be seen to, and some might interpret as that. Okay.
So we have to wait and see what Ulster's going to come with. And we've had a very good start to the year.
Yeah,
and
don't talk about that anymore, no?
Go ahead. Well, no. I don't think there's much more. We can say it's a ridiculous rule, but at the end of the day, the rule's in the book. Donegal broke it. There's punishment coming. We're going to wait to see what it is.
Right, and hopefully we'll all find out today. Right, so yesterday was I mean, Donegal was superb in the first half.
Very good in the first half.
They were pegged back a little bit in the second half. I don't know, you were there.
Yeah.
If new things were being tried or whatever, but we'll focus on yesterday's game. So I think Tyrone were set up better than Armagh were. No offense to Armagh, they were trying out younger players and what have you. But Tyrone were more of a
stiffer opposition.
So the first half brilliant, free scoring.
Donegal were very good.
And could have been miles ahead with goals
if they'd taken their goal opportunities. But they played very well in the first half. Tyrone came out a different team in the second half. They made a number of changes. The likes of Conn Kilpatrick came in, which helped them around the midfield, which they were struggling in. But Donegal sort of, they rode the comeback of Tyrone and settled back into the game. And Oisin Gallen, who actually wasn't in the game in the first half, even though Donegal were very, very good, he was prominent in the second half and got the Man of the Match award. And he steadied the ship with a number of points. But listen, from a footballing point of view, Donegal's going the right direction. We see the direction that Jim is going with this team. There's no doubt that Donegal, fitness-wise, are getting there. They're probably ahead now of where they were last year in the championship fitness wise, because no doubt under Jim McGuinness these boys are going to be super fit.
Fittles, yeah.
So yeah, when it comes to it, and there's still one or two players that have to come into the fold. He did name a strong enough, possibly the strongest team that was available to him yesterday for that game.
But in terms of the style of play, I mean, like,
we've seen the way they ran. If you want to talk about styles, the way they ran at Tyrone and the way they were able to break through
the significant? The high press on kickouts, the pressing up higher throughout.
That was evident very much over the last couple of games. But Jim has mentioned this himself about the running game and the transition. And you could see that in the first half yesterday, the way they were able with the running game to cut Tyrone open and these goal opportunities present themselves. You continue to work on that. Remember, Greg, we're only the second week of the year.
Yeah, for sure.
You continue to work on that and training, and there's no doubt the level of training that Donegal is doing will be hard on the players, but it'll be at a level that will have them super fit. And if they continue to develop this with more games coming and they evolve this running game and transition, there's no doubt come the championship that...
Yeah, and indeed, if you create the chances and the goal opportunities as the season wears on, you start converting them.
Donegal could have had four goals yesterday.
Yeah,
so they could have, but they took the sensible options. But they did get scores out of most of them opportunities. They did take the points, so they did.
Do you think we're at a point where other teams will look on and say, you know, Jim McGuinness arguably tactically changed the game once before? We're not at a point, are we, where we're doing anything so different that the Big Six or the Big Eight will look on and go, do we need to be adapting our game to this Donegal setup?
Well, you'll only know that over time. It's far too early doors yet to be looking to say that Jim McGuinness is going to change the way Gaelic football is. There's no doubt what he'd done in the past had a massive bearing on it, and the rest of them had to sit up and take note. Will that happen again? We don't know. Okay. Only time will tell. And if that is going to happen again, Donegal at that stage will be winning competitions.
Yeah.
So it will.
Cork's the big game at the end of the month.
It's the start of the league. So it is. I think Donegal's in a very good place in Division 2. It's a good place to
Cork
rebuild.
And Donegal would be the favourites to come out of that.
It would be two of the Armagh as well is in there. And there's a lot of good teams in Division 2, but it's a good place for Donegal to continue to rebuild and put the building blocks in place ahead of the championship opener against Derry at the end of April. But we have to wait to see if Jim McGuinness is going to be in the line come the league.
It's fascinating. It really is. Okay.
But isn't it, it's crazy the way the story develops about Jim coming back and all the hype there was about his return, and we're only two games in, and now the national media is talking about Jim and Donegal in a slightly different light about breaking rules, Greg.
I know. Right, let's talk WRC.
World Rally Championship.
Yep, I know what it is.
Yeah. looking to come back to Donegal.
Not
to Donegal, but Ireland. Yeah, you've got a note that says WRC.
I've got a note that says WRC-Ireland.
Basically, tomorrow morning, there's going to be an announcement of the venue that will be part of the bid to host the World Rally Championship in 2025. There's three venues. Donegal's not part of it. It's all going to the south of the country. Waterford, Kerry and Limerick. Now Limerick seems to be ahead of the rest because they have a venue big enough that's going to hold 10,000 square metres. They can put everything into one venue, and that's the way that the WRC like it. Very good bids as well from Tralee and from Waterford as well. The thing that has Waterford going for it, well, Limerick has it too. They have the motorways, they have the access from the airports. The infrastructure is all there. We were hoping Donegal would play some sort of part in it, but that wasn't gonna happen. And you probably would need the cross border element that was here the last time it took place in 2007 and 2009. Now this is all dependent, Greg, on the Irish government putting money into it. Where they're at the moment, Ireland are talking with the organisers of the WRC to find a suitable venue.
Yeah.
When that is then agreed and announced and the plan is in place, the bid process would then turn to the Irish government, where they need to, I think it's €15 million they need of funding from the government if they are to press ahead with this. Now, Motorsport Ireland's argument is the government's...
That's a small investment.
It is for what they are saying will be a €300 million return. But as the Irish government, the last time it came, it needed money from both the north and the south.
Yeah, this
time it's just the south.
This would be a big deal for... I mean, we're a big...
It's a world sporting event.
It's huge.
It's a world sporting event. It's just a pity it's going to be so far south. It's not about closer deals that we could enjoy it. But
so you'll find a way to get down there.
We may have to organise something.
So we'll know about that.
That will be tomorrow morning, 11 o'clock.
Okay, and then we'll hopefully then know the situation and what the ramifications might be for Donegal GAA later today.
Later today at some stage.
Communications.
We're hoping it's not going to be too sore on them, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, it just is whether there's leniency or we're made an example of. Okay, Oisin, listen, obviously you and the sports team will keep us up to date on everything, on the bulletins, on air, but of course online, highlandradio.com. Dig into the sports section there for post-match interviews, analysis and all that kind of stuff and the previews. It's absolutely wonderful what the sports team through Oisin do in covering sport, not just on air but online as well. Oisin, thanks so much.
Are you looking for me to make you a coffee or something?
No,
or?
I just think credit where it's due. There's a lot of stuff
on there. It's not like you.
You know. Cup of tea would be nice. Anyway, listen, thanks so much.
Thanks, Greg.
Oisin Kelly there. And by the way, we will revisit that, I would imagine, tomorrow, dependent on the outcome. Sunday morning, an orange van parked in my area in a show, and occupants in a nearby field shooting guns. I haven't heard of trouble with local sheep being worried and wondered if these fox hunters have permission. Children in houses nearby could be out playing. And what about the poor foxes? Never mind disturbing neighbours. Yeah, indeed. Lord help us, but just hope they don't bankrupt us. Young lads was missing since Friday from Burnfoot. Thankfully, he was found. Happened quite often, whatever's going on. Right, okay. Two comments in one there. Listen, thanks very much for that. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9. Stay safe if you're out on the roads throughout the course of the day, but particularly overnight and travelling in the morning. I know I'm going to have to leave considerably more time to get here in good time tomorrow. But for me, Greg Hughes and Caroline and Shannon, have a wonderful day.